Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting faith with life.
Hi, welcome to Connecting Faith. Thank you for tuning in. Glad to have you part of our Monday gathering. Now, here at Faith Radio, we love the opportunity to get together with you every day. We have great programs. We have relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching and wonderful interactive talk programs. And, well, we are so thankful that you're joining us here on Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem, along with Ted Ross. We are mourning the loss today of our morning show host, died suddenly over the weekend, in case you had not heard. Austin Hill passed away. Ted, it was just a complete shock to all of us.
Really, yeah. I saw that news later than most. I think the word went out amongst our staff on Saturday, and I happened to see it last night. And shock is the word, you know. Yeah. And it's a reminder that life is short and to be grateful for every day. And I was talking to my family about that this morning.
Yeah, he leaves his wife and a 16-year-old son, and our thoughts and prayers are with Austin's family. We've posted some information up on our website, so you can check that out at myfaithradio.com. It's also on his show page, Austin Hill in the Morning. Dick Whitworth and I spent some time together on the morning show, just letting the morning show listeners know about that, but would love to have you maybe listen in over the week. You'll have an opportunity to comment and reflect. If you're a morning show listener, we'd be honored to have you share some thoughts. You can also use our Faith Line anytime. After this show's done, the Faith Line is available at 877-93-FAITH, and you could just leave a comment to press 2 there if you'd like to do that. But and we'll have more details about what's happening in the days ahead. But
Also, just to mention that our website, there's a link to a college fund that's been set up for his son, Graham, who's a senior in high school this year, too.
So thank you for your prayers for Austin's wife and son, Graham, and their extended family during this time of shock and mourning. Today at Staff Devotions, Dick read a portion of 2 Corinthians from the Message. So we're not giving up. How could we? Even though on the outside, it often looks like things are falling apart on us. On the inside, where God is making new life, not a day goes by without his unfolding grace. These hard times are small potatoes compared to the coming good times, the lavish celebration prepared for us. There's far more here than meets the eye. The things we see now are here today, gone tomorrow, but the things we can't see now will last forever. And we hold on to that hope. I hope you do as well, and are thankful to have your prayers and thoughts for Austin's family today.
Amen. Yes, a lot of events between birth and death in life, too. And on a happier note, somebody on our staff is getting ready to get married.
That's right.
In about a week or two.
Yeah, yeah. And we want marriages to last. And speaking of things that last forever, we're going to talk about how do we make marriage last? How do we prepare for marriage well? Today, we're going to focus on that. In fact, talk about something called Future Marriage University. Since about 2003, Michael Johnson and his wife Julie have pursued a unique passion for preparing college students and smart singles for success in their future marriages, sharing practical, passionate, biblical truth about sex, dating, and relationships. It started out in the living room as a series of small group studies, and it's grown into Future Marriage University. And it's an organization that the Johnsons have founded that empowers college and career singles to prepare for marriage like a successful career intentionally, intelligently, and in advance. And with that, we want to welcome back Michael Johnson to Connecting Faith. Michael, good to have you with us today.
It's great to be here. And again, I just add my condolences and the loss of Austin and to his family. That is hard. That is really hard.
Yeah, I'd say we're in shock, really, and that's, I guess, to be expected. But that we do want to go on with today's program and know that, that marriage can be kind of a shock if you're unprepared for it. And I guess maybe I'm just interested in hearing from you. You talk about what's needed is, you said there's a missing link between the sex education that get provided in school and the premarital counseling most people don't get until they're already coupled up. You call it love education. What is that? And, what have our kids been taught instead?
Yeah, exactly. Well, bottom line is a key thing that we have to remember is that puberty may be natural, may be inevitable. Maturity is not. Maturity has to be learned. Maturity has to be cultivated and encouraged. Instead, in our culture, we get the, you know, the sex education is mostly informing our kids about what's happening with puberty, which, of course, is going to happen no matter what they do. But then the result, the need for maturity to go along with that is not taught. I think, you know, kids are left at the end of sex education, even in a Christian, in a church setting, that, wow, that's amazing. And then the churches say, yep, but it's for marriage, the end. And it actually leaves our Christian youth with the idea that marriage is basically just the gateway to guilt-free sex. And what Love Education does, what we're trying to do in Future Marriage University, is encourage young people, youth, high, college students, young adults, to think bigger. That there is so much more to marriage than guilt-free sex. That life is about relationships. That, you know, we're, you know, take Austin. His wife is missing a relationship. That is what her marriage was. His son is missing a relationship. And our kids are not taught how to develop close relational, emotional, intimate relationships. They're taught how to have sexual intimacy. In the church, they're taught, don't do that until you get married. But all the while, our desire for sexual intimacy is barely a shadow of our soul's greater need for emotional, relational intimacy.
Well, and you talk about that, you know, the importance of Future Marriage University is that we need to approach this intelligently, intentionally, and in advance. And I'm thinking, well, that's probably because once we get into a relationship, right, our emotions kind of cloud our thinking, don't they?
A little bit. You know, we already knew that, right? But now, believe it or not, you listening, it's been confirmed. Scientists have confirmed it now. So we only thought we knew before. But now science shows us how the chemical interactions going on in our brain when we fall in love are very similar to the kind of reactions you get when you do illicit drugs. Again, we already knew that, but now we have proof. So, yeah, it's very difficult at that point in time to then receive real solid information on how to make a marriage work because you are literally not thinking clearly at the time. The other two things, though, is you also have a relationship to defend. In other words, you know, I've spent all this time and all this effort, and, you know, if this is the one, then I got to start all over again. And so you have that impetus to just keep charging ahead, even though all the red lights are going off. And thirdly and finally, you have this funny little thing that it is disloyal to acknowledge the inadequacies of your relationship or the person you're dating. And I say it's funny because that rule only applies up until you get married. Prior to marriage, it is disloyal to acknowledge inadequacies in your relationship or the person you're with until you're married. And then the gloves come off and the inadequacies are vocalized to your spouse and friends and family members, probably maybe a counselor eventually. And I think we need to change that, turn that around. But it's, again, with the whole chemical stuff, the emotional stuff that you brought up, it makes it so difficult. That's why I think it's so important to prepare for the life, a life-giving, lifelong marriage in advance of even dating, so that you can have a better idea ahead of time of what you're looking for and who you are supposed to be.
Getting practical and passionate biblical truth about sex, dating, and relationships today. That's really what happens regularly with Future Marriage University. Michael Johnson and his wife, Julie, travel the country speaking to, well, a lot of college and university campuses. I think last time we talked, Michael was on the University of Northwestern campus doing this very thing, just talking with students about these issues. You may have a question, maybe something that your student has wondered about or wondering how you can encourage them, or you're single at this point and in the midst of a relationship and just wondering how you can make sure that you see relationship success. In fact, we're going to ask Michael about that. What is relational success? Because he talks about that in several of his books, and we'll get to that and more coming up in just a couple of minutes. We'd love to have you join the conversation with a phone call, and you can make that call right now at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Michael Johnson is founder, along with his wife, Julia, of Future Marriage University. In fact, you want to find out more about that, and got a minute to look up online. If you just go to f-m-u.com for Future Marriage University, f-m-u.com, and you can find out more about all the great resources there. More with Michael Johnson in just a moment on Connecting Faith.
Yo.
Love is not proud. Love does not boast. Love, after all, matters the most. Love does
not. If we're in love, everything is fine. Sorry, I don't think those words were in there, were they, Ted? Sorry.
I don't know. Maybe in the initial edit, but sure. Not in that one.
We're talking with Michael Johnson today. Michael and his wife, Julie, started Future Marriage University back in 2003 with a mission to equip the church to empower individuals to prepare for marriage just as they would a successful career, intentionally, intelligently, and in advance. And Michael speaks to college students and youth and young adults with the passionate biblical insights about sex, dating, and relationships. Written a couple books, including Top 10 Marriage Tips for Smart Singles. There's a couple of parts to that, I think, parts 1, 2, and 3, I think. And Michael and his wife, Julie, have celebrated their 22nd anniversary. They have 5 children, 3 teenagers, and 2 adopted children. So he knows about relationships, and we're talking today about how we can strengthen ours. In fact, one of the things you talk about in your book is lessons for relational success. Michael, how do you define relational success, or how should we look at that?
Well, I think it's important, just a little background, that every day when we wake up, we don't think these two questions consciously, but in the back of our mind, the questions, the burning questions in everybody, believer, unbeliever, white, black, yellow, red, is who am I? And why am I here? And that first question is a question of identity. Who am I? What's my identity? And the second question is of our purpose. You know, why am I here? What am I supposed to do? And it is in the context of healthy relationships where we're supposed to get those questions answered. So to answer your question, as far as, you know, healthy relationships is where you can actually have a emotional, relational, intimate relationship with the people that are most important to you. And when I say intimate, I feel like automatically people go one place that I don't want them to go, which is why I say relational, emotional intimacy. But to make it really simple, it's the desire to know and be known. And that is what our heart is continually crying out for, is to know and be known. We even see that in 1 Corinthians 13. You know, everybody knows that as, well, I don't know if everybody, most people know that as the love chapter. And, of course, they hear it at weddings. Love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. You know, and every verse in that passage has the word love in it until you get to this one verse, verse 11, where it says, when I was a child, I thought like a child. I talked like a child. I reasoned like a child. But when I became a man, I put childish ways behind me. Well, you're like, wait a second. Let's back up. We were talking about love. It sounded all mushy, gushy, and fun. Actually, it doesn't really sound mushy and gushy in 1 Corinthians 13. It sounds pretty, wow, like a tall order. But the whole idea of love is to bring us to maturity. That is the goal. And so when we're sitting there waking up in the morning, well, what's my purpose? Well, growing up. Maybe not being a rock star. Maybe not being, you know, a guy with a girlfriend, a girl with a boyfriend, but it's to grow up. And then the second piece is that intimacy part, because it says, now I see dimly as in a mirror, but then I shall see face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And that is just, that's what our heart cries out for. Oh, I want to know and be known. And so if a person has healthy relationships, they are growing in that maturity, and they are becoming to know who they are more and more accurately in the context of those relationships.
What's your sense of how culture maybe approaches dating and the idea of marriage? I mean, obviously, the marriage doesn't even, it's not even a qualifier for, sexual encounters anymore. I mean, the cohabiting is growing by leaps and bounds. But, I mean, are there sort of cultural trends say, well, this is why you want to get married?
Yeah, I really think, if anything, there's a lot of things the Supreme Court decision showed us from the summer, but, we have turned marriage into a contract relationship that celebrates romantic feelings and gives us tax breaks. That's what marriage has become. So we can't be upset at a certain small minority of people for the change in marriage definition. The heterosexuals have changed the definition of marriage. Ironically, I mentioned earlier the 1 Corinthians 13 passage. And if you read that, that is about agape love. That is about a sacrificial, self-giving love. And yet, despite that passage being referenced at most weddings, every other part of the wedding is mostly about celebrating romantic love. And so that is marriage in a nutshell. We're going to acknowledge your romantic feelings and give you a tax break. When really the reason the government has a vested interest in supporting marriage is because it is supposed to be the most safe, secure environment for the future taxpayers to be born and raised. So that's supposed to be their interest. As far as the church is concerned, it's about those children being raised in the Lord, whether they're future taxpayers or not, that they are bringing up the future generation of believers. That's the case when it was the nation of Israel and Christianity didn't exist, and that's the case today now that we have the church body, and that is the arena where we are supposed to raise it. So, again, I see a lot of angst about marriage, particularly with millennials. They still statistically want to be married. There's actually a survey conducted by, believe it or not, MTV, which I realize is not exactly the paragon of research validity. But what they found is 92% of respondents said they either probably or definitely wanted to be married, which prior to reading that research, I wouldn't have even thought that would be true of homeschool church kids. I just didn't think that there was that much desire in our culture to still be married, but it's there. But again, it's there because our culture believes they will find themselves in romantic, or as the Greeks call it, eros, love, when that wasn't the kind of love I was talking about earlier in 1 Corinthians 13. It's not a romantic eros love. It's a sacrificial, agape, phileo, brotherly love. And that is where, that's what marriage is supposed to celebrate. That's what my marriage with Julie is most of the time. Most of the time, it is not eros, romantic, mushy-gushy, most of the time she's my partner, I'm her partner, we're figuring out how to raise these kids, we're figuring out how to pay the bills, we're figuring out where do we take this ministry next. And that is where, that's what marriage is about.
Even with such a high interest in marriage, as we mentioned, cohabiting is still so strong and growing. I'm just curious. I'm sure even as you travel, not only on Christian college campuses, but wherever you go, speaking to young people, that they're you know, they're sort of falling for that, I guess, the lie that somehow that's going to prepare them for marriage, right? I mean, you're talking about preparing for marriage, but cohabiting isn't the answer, is it?
Yeah. In fact, if you think about it, it's doing the exact opposite. Because a new invention of our culture, by the way, is sexual compatibility. That was not something I actually really thought a whole lot about when I got married 22 years ago. I just assumed that I'm marrying a girl, we're going to have sexual compatibility. It's probably going to work out. But that has now, again, because Eros, romantic love, is so the big deal, then yes, Neil, you need to live with that person first, and you need to make sure that all works out. But while you do that, you are not developing the relational, emotional intimacy that actually needs to be developed. In fact, again, scientists, thank goodness for scientists, because they can prove everything, even though some of the things we already knew. But whenever a couple gets sexually engaged early on in the relationship, it shuts down the relational, emotional intimacy because it's replaced. I call sex an intimacy imposter. I mean, you can't feel any closer to somebody than when you're engaging in sexual activity. And that's the way God made sex to be. But if after that event, you do not have a relationship with that person that is real, then that just makes the sex an imposter. It's just a false sense of intimacy that isn't really there. And that's what people cohabitating are experiencing. And in fact, the cohabitating will keep them in a bad relationship longer because of the sexual bonding that happens, particularly with the drug oxytocin. There's a lot of chemical stuff going on in the brain when all that's involved. But particularly with oxytocin, you feel close, and so you think you're close, and so you act close, even though at the end of the day, they don't really know you, and you don't really know them.
We want to find out, how do we know more about our spouses? How do we prepare for marriage? Future Marriage University is our focus today, and we're also talking about some of the top 10 marriage tips for smart singles. We'll get through a few of those tips. Critical lessons for relational success. Michael Johnson is my guest today. Michael is, and his wife Julie established Future Marriage University back in 2003, and he speaks around college campuses and universities and student groups all around the country. He and his wife have 22 years of marriage together, 5 children, and live outside of Nashville, and joining us today. You can find out more about Future Marriage University on the website at f-m-u.com, and we'll talk more about that. But we'll get some perspective about, you know, if we need to make some changes, if we all have deficiencies, how do we determine which ones we can live with? We'll get to that and more coming up with Michael Johnson here on Connecting Faith. Stay tuned. Yes. All right. Well, we're talking about what's the biblical approach to sex, dating, and relationships. There are some things that we can do and should do to prepare for a meaningful relationship to grow in our marriages. Future Marriage University started out as a series of small group studies. It's an organization co-founded by Michael Johnson and his wife, Julie, that empowers college and career-age singles across the country to prepare for marriage like a successful career, intentionally, intelligently, and in advance. And one of the things, Michael, you address is that, you know, we somehow feel disloyal if we acknowledge that, you know, maybe there's some faults in our relationship or in our partner, in ourselves. So say a little bit about, you know, we all have deficiencies. How do we determine which ones we can live with, which ones we can overcome, and which ones need to change?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it starts with just focusing on the right priorities. A lot of times we are so uptight about chemistry. And do you need chemistry in a marriage? Absolutely. Yes, you do. But couples time and time again will overlook character problems because of chemistry. And if you focus instead on the character of your date or boyfriend, girlfriend, and just what kind of person are they? Are they responsible? Are they honest? Are they straightforward? Do they think about other people first, or they tend to just, you know, it's them first, and it's a struggle for them to, hey, wait a second, maybe I ought to pretend like other people in the world. Those are the sort of things. Character trumps chemistry every single time. I think about the couples that I know that are unhappy in marriage. And Neil, they had chemistry at one time, dude. They had it. It was on fire. No doubt about it. Now, one or both of them won't even admit to that now. They won't even believe it because they're struggling so much. But if you look at why they're struggling, one or both of them have character issues that are just flaming out of control. So that's really, you know, as far as you're looking for, you know, what deficiencies to overlook, for, you know, what things to really pay attention to, I think character is huge. And what Julie and I found, I say this like it was some sort of research project. What happened in our relationship is I just liked Julie when I met her. Thought she was neat, cute, whatever. Oh, she's really funny. That's good. But the more I got to know who she was, there was about a point somewhere after knowing her for 2 years where she went from just some cute girl to this girl that I was like, wow, I think I like you. And all the other girls that I felt that chemistry for right away, all those sparks and whatever, that didn't happen. And I'll tell you what's happened after 22 years of marriage now. Now I look at that woman, and I don't have the same sparks and all that stuff. But I mean, not like I did when we were dating and newly married. But I look at her, and I am actually astonished at the woman that she has become. But she already had the seeds of that when I knew her as a friend. She already had the seeds of that when I knew her when we were dating. And that character has just continued to grow and enrich and deepen and mature. And I tell you what, that is, that turns me on more than, in a different way than all the little sexual chemistry before.
So say more about how we are able to maybe discern that. I was thinking about, you know, what's realistic to expect in terms of the pool of eligible mates. I mean, when we're, I think one of the things you, like I saw someplace on the website, a date is a terrible thing to waste. I mean, is it all about, you know, how do we go about determining that or pursuing that when we're trying to, all right, what's this person, what's really behind the beauty of this person?
Yeah. Yeah, well, one of the things I would encourage, and again, this happened with Julie and I by accident. I'd like to say that, yeah, we applied this wisdom intentionally from the start. No, it happened by accident for us. But I really encourage people to learn two things first about, well, actually really three things. Determine, you know, get a good grasp of what a person's character is. Get a good knowledge of their friends. Like, get to know their friends. And thirdly, get to know what their friends think about their character. In other words, what this person that you're interested in is portraying to you may not actually be the person that the people that know him best see him as. I think about the woman that used to live down the street from us who was told over and over again, oh, he is so he used to be so different before he met you. Oh, he's just so changed. Oh. And, of course, she feels like more or less the female version of the savior of this man. And it seemed all great, but she didn't realize that those were red flags. I don't even think the people talk to her realize that those are red flags. They're like, wow, this man's changed ever since he's known you. Well, it turned out he hadn't. He was putting on a good show to get the girl and the money that he knew would be with the girl. So get to know that person's character. Get to know their friends. Get to know what their friends think about that person's character. And again, that's why we encourage, you know, get to know people in groups. It's why it's so rich and wonderful to do that in college because it's such a rare time. But if you're in your 20-somethings, 30-somethings, 40-somethings, 50-somethings, and you're not in that, you need to be rooted in a church, where you're not there to find a date, you're there to grow in relational, emotional intimacy, maybe with potential mates, maybe with older couples, maybe with younger people that you're mentoring, but in the context of those relationships, God is fully capable of bringing you into a relationship that you were dreaming of and maybe better than that.
You know, Michael, there's talking about, you know, the person who has really changed, you know, since they started dating. But, you know, there's the old saying, isn't it, that we can only change ourselves, really? So how does this work in building a successful relationship, you know, where once the marriage is, you know, we're in a marriage, then it's, you know, trying to change the spouse isn't that nearly as easy, perhaps.
No, it isn't. No, I really have, I struggle with this just like everybody else that's married. I mean, the struggle is changing yourself. And, you know, especially with millennials today, they want to change the world. They want to stop sex trafficking. They want to stop global warming. They want to whatever, you know, insert cause here. But as you said just a second ago, Neil, the only person I got much control over at all is me. And so if I'm going to change anything in this world between now and the time my time is done, like Austin's, the only thing I'm going to have the best chance of changing is me. And Julie and I have a video on our YouTube channel. By the way, all our social media can be found at /FM University. That's for Facebook, that's for YouTube, that's for Instagram, that's for Twitter. You know, put in that you know, facebook.com/FM University. But there's a video on our YouTube channel where we share the secret of relational success. And I build it all up and I tell Julie, go on, tell them what makes our marriage work. And she looks at the camera and she says, I'm learning to die to myself. And I'm like, well, tell them about all the other things that are in. That's the key. And, you know, the killer is, no pun intended, is that that's what Jesus is calling us to do, whether we get married or not. He's asking us to die to ourselves. And it is dying to ourselves that we find ourselves. It is in dying to ourselves for Christ's sake that we find that he is the life that we need, and we find that he's able to change those things that we didn't think we'd be able to change. I had a porn addiction and I didn't think I'd be able to change. That's okay. Jesus is able to do that. I still struggle with my anger. And I don't know why. I only have 5 kids and I was born an only child. I don't know why that should be so hard. But, dude, I am still not the guy I used to be. Maybe you'd sit in my home for a day and you'd be like, geez, MJ needs to calm down. But wow, I mean, I'm growing. But we're learning to die to ourselves every day, Julie and I. And if you can commit to that in marriage, in singleness, in divorce, in remarriage, then you're on the right path. And of course, all that does is throw us at the mercy of Jesus. All that does is put me right back on my knees again, saying, God, I can't do this, but you can. You have called me to be this woman's man. You have called me to love her as Christ loved the church. I can't do that on my own. Show me how.
And I'm interested in the kind of feedback you get, you know, as you have a chance to talk with students. I mean, do they look at this and say, yeah, that's the ideal. That's what I really want. I didn't think it was possible. I mean, or do they say, you know, that seems unrealistic?
I one of my favorite stories to share is this. I was on another college campus in Illinois. This young lady came up to me. I'd spoken the night before. Believe it or not, the name of the talk was How Marriage Can Be More Fun Than a Nudist Colony, which I know sounds like silly and, you know, whatever. But I really do try to cast a vision for marriage that is bigger than guilt-free sex, that's bigger than romantic completion. In any case, this girl comes up to me the next day because I was speaking in chapel that morning. And she had tears in the back of her eyes. And she said, I always wondered what marriage was supposed to look like. And I never felt like I had any idea until last night. So, and I'll tell you, too, It's the real rock stars out there that need to be speaking up. Julie and I have just been married 22 years, but there are many someone listening to my voice right now who have rocked 30 plus years of marriage. And maybe part of that was rough. Maybe a lot of that was rough, but you've come through it and you're like, this is it. This is what people are looking for. Yes, it is. You need to share your story because you will have people just like that young lady come up to you and be like, ah, I thought it was just for guilt-free sex, or I thought it was just to have children, or I thought it was just to have a house and a white picket fence, but now I get it. But we just need to speak up, and not after couples come to us and say, we think we want to get married. That is too late. We need to go to the youth, the middle schoolers, high schoolers, college students, and help them see, help them understand what they're shooting for.
We're going to talk more in just a moment about how far in advance should parents and children begin talking about future marriage plans. That's one of the heartbeats of what Future Marriage University is all about. Michael and his wife, Julie Johnson, founded this to empower college and career age singles across the U.S. to prepare for marriage like a successful career, intentionally, intelligently, and in advance. He's also written a study guide, Beyond Sex and Salvation, and you can find out more on their website, f-m-u.com. More with Michael Johnson in just a moment. And we'll also talk about, do guys have a harder time being realistic about marriage, or is it girls? And maybe there's some lessons to apply if we're single again after a marriage breakup. We'll get to that in just a moment with Michael Johnson here on Connecting Faith. Michael Johnson and his wife, Julie, have been married 22 years. They have a unique passion for preparing students for success in their future marriage. They share practical, passionate, biblical truth about sex, dating, and relationships. Future Marriage University is the ministry. And they've written together Beyond Sex and Salvation study guide, and got a lot of materials online as well. On videos and such. And Michael travels around the country speaking. We're talking with him today about some important words. One of the things that they talk about, we plan intentionally, intelligently, and in advance. So how far in advance, Michael, should we be thinking about this?
Well, sadly, we really do have to start earlier than really, honestly, we probably should. I remember being in a parent session at our own church, and this girl, this mother raised her hand. She's like, well, when should we start talking about same sex stuff? And, my daughter's just in middle school. And I'm like, well, is she in public school? She's like, yes. I said, then she already has friends that either think they are or definitely are, gay or a lesbian. She's like, yeah, but it seems too early. And I said, yes, it is. It is too early to be talking about these issues with a child that's barely gone through puberty. But unless we're going to totally isolate them from the culture, I mean, they're hearing it anyway. And so they need to hear that early. But for me, with my voice, it's the other thing is porn. To be able to warn our kids against pornography. When I was a young kid, I was told in youth group about this pornography thing, and it looked great and amazing, but it's bad. You shouldn't look at it. The end. And what I've tried to do with my boys is explain to them, again, I have three of them, one that's 19, almost 20, one that's 12, and one that's 11. And I want them to understand, it looks great, and it's, because God outdid himself. He made the female body awesome. But he made you to enjoy one female body. And as I heard, I wish I could remember what speaker said this, but pornography is not so much an addiction with sex. It's an addiction with variety. And as soon as we get set in our mind that variety as the natural, the default setting for our sexuality, that makes sexual fulfillment pretty much impossible, because you can't ever get enough. So I told my at age 10, that's not true with my youngest, because, you know, your kids are in different, you know, your kid, you know what the maturity level is and everything, but you got to know what the culture is saying, and then you got to know the, you know, where your kid is. And for two out of my three boys at age 10, they were already warned very clearly about pornography. And then, you know, once they get in the middle school range, you need to address the all the different sexual options, quote unquote, that are being presented out there. And your kids need to understand that, again, sexuality is supposed to be an expression of a relationship. It is not supposed to be an activity, a recreational activity that you engage in. It's supposed to be the outer workings of this one particular relationship between one man and one woman.
Fredley, one of our regular listeners, called and asked, do you have some advice? We're talking about how early in it, far in advance, to start talking about this. He says, do you have some advice for older people who are still interested in getting married, for those maybe who've gone through a divorce or are widows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, I don't feel like I did this morning. I just answered a comment on one of my blog posts that said the person admitted that they're closer to 40 than 30 and still waiting. And I just encourage them what I would encourage you to do, which is instead of trying to avoid sexual temptation, to throw all your efforts into pursuing relational, emotional intimacy with people of the same gender that you can just grow in a relationship in. When I went to Baylor back in college, way back in the olden days, back when actually the Bears lost almost every game, but we don't need to go there.
No.
That said, when I went there, I wanted a girlfriend. I wanted to find a girlfriend. Now, what I did instead is I wound up dating a bunch of different girls, and I say dating, not in a serious relationship, just going out and getting to know one another and have a good time, but I also met and grew in relationship with some great guys. I had two accountability partners, Yancey and Pete, that I met with separately every week. Sophomore, junior, senior year in college, I lived with the same three guys, Fred, Greg, and Stuart. Again, this is wisdom that I wish I could tell you I pursued intentionally, on purpose. That's not the way it was. That's the way God directed. And I truly believe that growing those relationships with those guys and getting my emotional, relational needs met in those healthy, same-gender, platonic relationships helped turn down the intensity on needing to have that romantic and, of course, in marriage, sexual relationship. It helped. It didn't take all the temptation away. It didn't take all the longing away. But it helped balance it. But what I find with even 30-something and 40-something-year-old singles is, dadgummit, they are dead set. They have got to find that girl or that guy. And they don't have the healthy same-gender relationships that they need. And they think they don't need them because they just need this guy or they just need this girl. No. Julie and I have been married 22 years, and we still need those other same-gender relationships to help us. We still need them. We still need to go to them and be like, oh, man, you're not going to believe what she said, and not have that person like badmouth my wife, but no, be like, okay, well, what'd you do, idiot? And then just, and they can call me idiot because I know they love me, and I know they care about me, and we're close, and they help me walk through that stuff. What did you do with your kids? Are you kidding me? We still need those relationships. But I see so many older, more mature singles that are not pursuing those kind of relationships.
Do you find do guys have a harder time maybe being realistic about relationships, or girls maybe not, the ones not thinking clearly? Mm-hmm. Can you make any blanket statements?
No, blanket. I would say it's pretty equal on both sides of the fence. For men, they expect to to marry a, you know, a porn star that loves Jesus, and the women think they're going to marry some vampire dude that's going to want their blood in a really good way. And it's just like, I'm sorry, what did y'all just say? I mean, and of course they don't say it out loud like that, but when you get to, when you have the discussion, you're like, do you realize that this is what you're describing really, and that this probably doesn't exist? So yeah, it's on both sides. And again, I think it's from the misunderstanding that the true love that will fulfill us is eros, romantic, sexual love. And in reality, it's phileo love, brotherly love, that is the stronger of those two. I won't deny that eros love is strong. I mean, sexual love is strong. It's amazing, whatever. But it's strong like lightning. Whereas phileo love is strong like a warm fire that you could actually cook food and warm yourself by. And they're both kind of, you know, dangerous, but one can actually be able to benefit you in a way that, you know, the sexual eros, romantic love just comes and goes. It can't be relied on. So again, if we can reset the dial on what the real love that we're looking for is, and of course I can't ignore the fact that we forget about Christ's love. And we sing these worship songs in church about how, you know, we have such intimate longing for him and he has intimate longing for us. But honestly, I think we walk out of those worship services and we don't really believe that God loves us like that. And we don't really believe that his love is that great. But we're sure that somebody of the opposite sex will have a love that will fill us. And it's like, no, that's not going to happen.
Michael Johnson from Future Marriage University, got just a minute or so left. Say a word about what people can find on your website and you know, social media pages.
Absolutely, thanks for that. We blog every week. Also, my wife and I do a video blog called Love Ed with Julie and MJ. That happens every week. You can find that on our website, f-m-u.com for FutureMarriageUniversity.com. And again, all our social media is FM University for Future Marriage University. Just put in, if it's Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, put in that address and then put a /FM University and you'll be there.
Well, some encouragement for everyone listening today. And hopefully you know someone that could benefit from really thinking intentionally about a successful relationship. What does relational success really look like? Well, there's some critical life lessons that Michael and Julie help us through as we learn to be intentional and intelligent and be thinking ahead about these relationships, particularly as it comes to marriage, making a marriage success. Michael Johnson and his wife Julie pursuing Future Marriage University to help students of a variety of ages in their future marriages. And you can get more information on the website at f-m-u.com for Future Marriage University. Michael, it's good to visit with you again, and blessings to you.
Thank
as you,
you Neil.
Travel around the country and have an opportunity to speak. And we look forward to having you maybe on the University of Northwestern campus again sometime. We'll have you in studio.
I would love it, and thank you for having me on again.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, you know, do we have to say anything nice about the Bears, the Baylor Bears, or...?
No, okay. That's fine.
Okay. They'll do fine without us, I'm sure, encouraging us. All right. Thank you, Michael. Michael Johnson joining us today on Connecting Faith. If you missed part of today's show or you want to pass on the conversation to a friend, you know, all our interviews are posted online, and it's all shareable. You just go to myfaithradio.com and then click on the Connecting Faith show page. You'll find the podcast archives there, and you can pass it on. It's myfaithradio.com.